Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Right, so how was your research go on this one?
Yeah, it did get a little bit deeper than the few news articles I managed to find, because they were just very brief.
Yeah.
But I started having a little dive onto the Wikipedia, and that, you know, I don't want it to just be a regurgitation of what it says in the wiki, but that gave me a little bit more.
Yeah. I'll be honest, when I looked, there was more to it than I was expecting, because I was like, oh, well, I sort of know the general mystery, and I haven't read the resolution. But so I was like going to focus on that. And then when I looked into the resolution, I was like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I was like, well, it's not going to take me that much time to research them. When I went back to it to research day before yesterday, I was like, oh, shit, there's loads of theories and stuff. So I barely scratched the surface on them.
Oh, there might be quite a bit that I've missed then, because I couldn't really find all that much. I just sort of kind of found the hard facts.
Only the old theories from before they knew
who he was.
So it's because in terms of who he is, we know who he is.
Yeah.
But the mystery is, well, let's start the episode.
Yeah, go for it. You might have to lead it a little bit in that case then.
Yeah.
See how it goes.
Well, I'll be revisiting my notes. Let's see. I was sort of bashing these notes out in between studies, so they're not the neatest writing I've ever done. Okay. Hello, you're listening to Weird Tales Revisited. This is me, Bob Shoy, and as always on these episodes, I have Rick Dove.
Hello.
And it's the first episode of 2023.
Yeah.
So happy new year to everyone. I mean, it's halfway through January by the time this comes out, but, you know, it's still the first one, so happy new year.
Yeah, the intentions are good.
Yeah, there is, I don't know what the cutoff is for wishing people a happy new year.
I don't know. Well, we've not talked to them, so from both of us, happy new year.
Yeah. Love to you and all your family and friends, everyone, from me and Rick, and then Beef and Tis will wish you a happy new year on the next one. Anyway, today we are talking about one of the first things we ever talked about on Weird Tales and the Unexplainable, on that first episode where I sort of delved into a few famous mysteries, which has been like a great episode for mining topics for this spin-off show on, because I just brushed over the surface of them on that episode. And we're going to talk about the Somerton Man, which has been much requested since we started doing the revisited episodes. And Rick, before looking into this, what was your knowledge on the Somerton Man?
I knew that they'd found a guy in a suit with a briefcase, dead on a beach in Australia with a mysterious note in his pocket. And that was pretty much all I knew.
Yeah, I couldn't remember much from that first episode. And I didn't re-listen to the bit about the Somerton Man for this. I will later on. I like to put in a little clip for a little Weird Tales rewind later on this episode. So I will revisit what we said initially. But I couldn't remember much other than, like, yeah, there was a body, and it was a mystery who he was. But the main reason that people wanted us to revisit it is that last year there was a interesting development on this case, and they thought that the case was cracked. Mm. So throughout this episode, we're kind of going to kind of revisit and go over the details of the mystery, the Somerton Man, for those who aren't necessarily aware or haven't listened to that old episode or haven't heard of him before. we'll go over some of the theories that people had, and then we will talk about later on the revelations of last year and where the case stands at the moment.
Yeah, excellent.
So 1948.
Mm-hmm. Post-war.
1st of December at 6:30 a.m. A body was found on Somerton Beach. This is in Australia. Where is it in Australia? I did know that.
Adelaide. South Australia.
Adelaide, yes. You're right. Yeah. So someone saw a dead body on the beach. And they thought he was drunk and left him. And then the next day, he was still there and they called the police. And they took this man to the coroner. And it was a man in his mid-40s. He was in good shape. And he was wearing, Rick, what was he wearing?
He was wearing a full suit and tie.
Yes. All the things I've read. Oh, he was also wearing a sweater underneath this suit. It was like a full-on suit with a sweater on underneath it. He was wearing no hat. I was like, I don't know why everything that I read wanted to put out that he wasn't wearing a hat. Okay.
Like, that's weird.
Yeah. Or he also wasn't wearing glasses. I don't know.
The besuited corpse at the beach. No hat.
I think more at the time it was traditional to wear a hat with your suit or something, but
I guess
everyone
so,
loves
yeah.
to point out that he wasn't wearing a hat. Okay, he wasn't wearing, you know, clown shoes either, but they didn't point that out. He was clean shaven, no distinguishing marks, no tattoos, no ID, no dental records, you know, a real John Doe. In his pockets, a used bus ticket, an unused rail ticket. Do you know the interesting detail about the clothing he was wearing?
Was it that it had all the labels removed from it?
Yes. All of the labels were removed from all of the pieces of clothing, apart from three items which had the name Keane written in them. K-E-A-N-E. He had a cigarette behind his ear, and he had a half-smoked cigarette, like, on his body, sort of, like, between his, on his neck somewhere.
I didn't catch that detail in any of the research I did about the cigarette. That's interesting.
Yeah, I read that in the, I can't remember what source that was from that I was reading the other day, but some of this details I didn't have before, so I sort of, it was interesting to read into it in a bit more depth, because when we talked about it on that first episode, which is the only time I've ever heard about this story, it was literally like on a listicle, it was like one paragraph, a real summation, so to read it in more depth, you get these little details of the cigarette behind the ear and things like that. And on, so this is the mysterious bit, in a small pocket sewn on the inside of his trouser leg, there was a small piece of paper. What does this piece of paper say, Rick?
Well, from what I can see here, MLIAOIWTBIMPANETP.
No, that paper is from later on.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Yeah, so the piece of paper in his pocket
is the one
that just says
Tamam Shud.
Tamam Shud, yes. I had to double check, like, what was the bit you were reading? Yes, no, I do have that.
Yes, it's in my book, notes. Isn't it? You're right.
Yes. So the Tamam Shud is what it says on the piece of paper in his pocket, which means finished and is found on the last page of the book The Rubaiyat by Omar Khayyam, famous book of poetry.
Persian poetry, I believe.
Yes. So this is the mysterious situation. So it feels like almost a corpse found at the start of some sort of detective mystery or something. Then it's too many little juicy details.
Mm. Yeah, it's a beautiful setting. It sounds like Poirot is about to come wandering in.
Yeah, I love it. And it's clear just from these details why this is one of those mysteries that sort of captured people's imagination. Because it is juicy. When I first read about this, I was like, oh, flipping heck. Here we go. And they circulated his fingerprints, pictures of his face and everything around, but there were no leads from that.
So one of the things that I found kind of jarring, actually, whilst looking into it, was the police actually released just like a photo of the corpse. I mean, he looks quite well composed because he wasn't long dead and he's wearing his suit still and everything, but it's still kind of like, that's a body. It's really kind of jarring to look at.
This is interesting. So me and Becca were literally just talking about this, not about the Somerton man, but we were watching a documentary just now. And in that documentary, lots of dead bodies. Mm. And I was saying to her, it's weird how sheltered we are in England from images of death.
Yeah.
We're very much in other countries. I've been in other countries and the news has been on. There's just sometimes pictures of dead bodies. Like if there's a shooting, there's just pictures of corpses and stuff on news. In England, I don't know if this might be shocking to people listening, not from the UK, we don't see dead bodies. We're sheltered from that.
Mm. Yeah,
you do not just see a corpse on the news.
No, we see like the police tent that's around it. They'll never show the body.
You would not see a dead body. It's very rare that if you actually see a dead body in footage in the UK, I find it very jarring because I'm not used to it at all.
Mm.
So if I'm watching a documentary and there's a corpse in the documentary, I'm like, flipping heck, that's a dead body.
You know, like I do remember like back in the 90s, they would occasionally show bodies on the news. It'd be very rare, but I've got a memory of staying up around about age 10 or so, and the 10 o'clock right. news come on, and there'd been it was like a bombing in Iraq, and I think the Americans had actually bombed like a place where kids were playing football in Iraq, and I just right. I've got this stark image burnt into my mind of just this foot that was sat there amidst all this char and blood and, you know, viscera on the middle yeah. of this football field in Iraq. And yeah, that was probably one of the only times that I've actually seen really violent imagery on our telly that hasn't come from an American source.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I'm saying that, and then the documentary that I'm watching was on BBC Four, so maybe we do. But then that's airing a documentary.
True.
I suppose, which is, but it's a Werner Herzog documentary, so it's not of UK origin. So good on Werner.
One of the little details I did enjoy about the Somerton Man was the autopsy showed his last meal was a pasty.
Oh, I didn't know that detail. I like that.
Yeah, apparently so. Eaten about 3 to 4 hours before his death, they surmised.
I didn't know they had pasties over in Australia.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They got loads of great British meals over there, and the humble pasty is one of them.
Yeah, I do consider pasty like that is, you get that in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, a Cornish delicacy.
Mm.
I wonder if Americans know what a pasty is.
I don't know. Like, if you don't, American listeners, go have a quick look. Because
do they have sausage rolls in America?
I don't know if they do. I know they got those. What do you call them? Like the hot dogs in batter.
Corn dogs.
Corn dogs, and they're quite nice.
Yeah.
But
we don't really have corn dogs here.
No, we occasionally see them in the freezer section. But the humble pasty is fantastic. Because it used to, for the Americans out there, it used to be something where if you had leftovers from a stew or a casserole or something, they used to wrap it up in pastry and bake it, and then the miners down in Cornwall would take it down to the mines with them, and it'd act like a nice big healthy tasty lunch for them. And keep them going. It looks foul, sorts. But they're amazing.
Yeah, it looks horrible. Your two classic flavours are sort of like your meat and onions and carrots or whatever, mm-hmm. and peas or whatever, veg, and then your cheese and onion.
Yes.
Your two sort of classic pasties.
Oh, I love a cheese and onion pasty.
Yeah, warm cheese and onion pasty is pretty good. So,
anyway.
Moving on from the pasty talk.
Pasties aside.
When no one comes forward from the leads from the image of the corpse, they circulate image of the tamam shud, the piece of paper
with
the writing on, and someone comes forward. They find a copy of it's the rubaiyat, isn't it?
Yeah.
They find a copy of the rubaiyat on the back seat of their car, which they didn't put there. It's just so juicy. So this man finds the book with the missing page, by the way. The back page is missing in this copy.
Yeah.
And it is on the back seat of his car. And he's, you know, this is Australia. It's a bit like my mum's place in Cumbria. I'm not going to give her address, just in case anyone's listening, but she doesn't lock her doors. So they've never had any of their car or house locked up. It's that sort of place. And it sounds like this is that sort of place in Australia. Mm. The car's just unlocked on the street, so someone's chucked this in by the seams of it. So it's getting juicier and juicier. But in the back of the book, there is that's where the letters are, I think.
It is, yeah.
That you said about earlier.
Yeah. So it's like a scribbled cipher.
Yes, I've got it up. I've got a picture of it here now, yeah.
Mm.
It's like five lines of letters, all sort of capitals, all sort of nonsense, just strings of letters. One of them's crossed out, but there doesn't seem to be any meaning to it.
No, not at all.
And there's also a phone number written in the back of this book.
Yes.
And the phone number, is belongs to. So so many little like strands of the story. So it's like one thing leads onto another. It's bizarre. But the phone number leads on to it. It belongs to a nurse who happened to live very close to the location that the body was found.
Mm.
This nurse, who often went by the code name Jestin in the notes I was reading.
Yeah, which is strange.
I think she wanted to keep her name private or remain anonymous for like a lot of this stuff, so they used this code name Jestin. But she said she once owned a copy of that book during World War II of the Rubaiyat when she worked in a hospital, and she gave it to a soldier. She gave her copy to a soldier, and the soldier's name was Alfred Boxall, who was found alive during this investigation with his copy of the book, which was intact.
Yeah.
So it's just like, what's going on?
It's just such a weird coincidence, like such an obscure book.
It doesn't make sense. So, yeah, the nurse is now dead. She died 2007. My big question is, why is her number in this book? I find this book a very mysterious element of the story.
Yeah, because she said that she didn't know him, that she'd never met him, they had no relationship. Yeah.
So then the only other detail I have about the mystery is, so they found a suitcase in a nearby train station. This was about a month and a half after they found the body, they found the suitcase. Hmm. There was nothing unusual in it, just clothes and stuff. One thing they said about the clothes, that they were of US origin.
Yeah, and they said that some of them had the label... Oh, sorry, the suitcase had its label removed, apparently.
And like the clothes inside as well.
Oh, the clothes inside had as well.
Yeah,
wow.
So that's why... That was one of them. They're like, oh, all the clothes inside had their labels removed, just like the ones he was wearing as well, so...
To me, that suggests... It's like you said, some of them have the name Keane written in them. It sounds like maybe he was given those clothes by someone and cut the label out because it had someone else's name written in it, perhaps, mm-hmm. and he missed doing the other ones.
Yeah. So that's the mystery. Then for years and years, it was, who is the Somerton man? How did he die?
Yeah. Yeah, because if I remember correctly as well, the autopsy didn't actually show anything up. And then the autopsy report has gone missing as well.
All I've got about the autopsy is that the coroner suspected it was a possible poisoning. He suspected poison.
Yeah, but it was never verified, was it?
No.
Because he couldn't find any foreign objects. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's all I have about the autopsy.
But there's a quote here that I read from the coroner where he said, the heart was of normal size and normal in every way. Small vessels not commonly observed in the brain were easily discernible with congestion. There was congestion of the pharynx and the gullet was covered with whitening of superficial layers of mucosa with a patch of ulceration in the middle of it. The stomach was congested. There's congestion in the second half of the duodenum. Blood mixed with food in the stomach. Both kidneys were congested and the liver contained a great excess of blood in its vessels. So it suggests that it was in the early stages of trying to fight off some poison, but it was never
but
conclusive.
Not confirmed. Yeah, not necessarily the case.
Exactly, yeah.
Because that was never confirmed, there's all these wild theories, which we'll come to in a minute.
Yeah.
This is interesting. In the aftermath of all this, there were a few people who came forward with more details. But it seemed that anyone who came forward was met with threats and in some cases even death. So there was a similar case 3 years previously of a body found clutching the Rubaiyat.
Really?
Yes. This was a man named Joseph Marshall and he had been poisoned. 2 months after they found that body, a witness of his at the trial of it was found dead in his bathtub with his wrist slit.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa. I didn't come up to any of this in my research. That's nuts.
No, that was a real last minute find. So that is very odd and doesn't really line up with the information that we find out later.
That's so weird.
So I don't know if that's just another... It just seems to me there's so many coincidences.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds a little bit shady and it reminds me of... especially with the scrap of meaningless paper that he had on him with the various words, because it sounds like the book's almost acting like a one-time pad translator for like spying or sending coded messages.
One more interesting detail about that previous case is that happened only 2 months before the nurse gave her copy of the Railway Out to the soldier, and it happened only 1 kilometre away from where she did that as well. So she was nearby when that happened. There's so many weird details.
That's just too many coincidences. That's what?
It's like an episode of Jonathan Creek.
Whoa.
Yeah, American listeners probably have no idea what Jonathan Creek is.
That's very obscure for them, yeah.
It's kind of obscure for us now.
Yeah, I imagine like Round the Twist, but British.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
And worse.
I was going to say of Alan Davies, but I don't know who he is.
If you've ever seen QI, it's the guy with the fuzzy hair.
I don't think they know what QI is either. Here we are, listeners. There's some watching for you. QI. And Jonathan Creek. So yeah, so that's what I've got about the death. Is there any other stuff that you've got before we move on to some possible theories that people had?
No, that's about all I managed to pick up, really. It's just very mysterious. A man seemingly very out of place with bizarre effects about his person. And no one knows him.
No. And it would be, you know, another weird dead body, which happens all the time. But there's just these juicy little details that make it just a little bit weirder, like the bit of paper, you know, the labels being cut out, just everything. And no one being able to identify this man is the crux of it. Like, for years, he was just known as the Somerton man.
Yeah.
Because no one knew who this guy was.
And for something that's so well publicized as well, you'd think there might be someone who would recognize him or, you know, had a drink with him somewhere, seen him on his travels, but no one came forward.
No. You would think it's such a famous case, you'd think someone would have recognized him or someone would have seen him about. But no, no records. Mm. No one came forward about anything. And obviously with a case that's been this famous and has, you know, happened years ago. When did it happen? 1948. So that's a hell of a long time ago. There's been a lot of theories and ideas over the years about who the Somerton man possibly was. And yeah, did you get any of these, Rick? Did you see any of these?
I did see a few out there. Most of it seems to revolve around spying, but
yes.
What did you manage to pick up?
Well, there's so many, and I started looking into them before. It just feels like some of them are just people just chucking nonsense out there.
Mm-hmm.
Just anything. So I've got a whole page of theories here. And I started writing them down, and after a while I stopped because I was just like, this is getting ridiculous. So there's the most common theory was the spy angle.
Yes.
And different permutations of that. So he's a Soviet spy and he was assassinated by the Australians. Or he's a defected Soviet spy and he was assassinated by the Russians. Or he's an Australian spy and he was assassinated by the Soviets. Or he was an Australian spy secretly working for the Soviets who committed suicide over his blown cover. And it doesn't seem to be any evidence for any of this.
No.
It's just people chucking out ideas. Well, what if this?
Pure conjecture, yeah. Like we see with most of the stuff that we revisit.
And I think what you were saying about that strip of paper, the notes in the back of the book and the missing page and all that, it seems very codey.
Mm.
So it seems spy shit. It just feels like a spy movie.
Yeah.
So people are just automatically like, it's a spy. It's spy shit. And part of me is like, do spies really do this shit? Is this actually how spying works? I don't know if you know any spies, Rick.
I'm afraid I don't, no. Let's get one on. We'll have a phone around.
I'd love an episode. I'd love a spy on an episode.
But I think genuinely, they did used to use stuff like, you know, one-time pads to share information. When there was a famous Russian spy ring that was operating in America that was busted, I think it was in the early 2000s, if I remember correctly. And they were found to be using shortwave radios for long distance communication and using things like one-time pads. So things that you can't replicate. So even if someone else picks up the signal, it makes no sense to them because they need this other pad with them to be able to translate the message that's come through.
It's the same as the theories about number stations and stuff like that, yes, as well, them being codes for things.
Exactly.
A classic Weird Tales episode number 3.
Yep, early one.
Yeah. So the spy theories, they're just people chuck different permutations of that all over the place.
Mm.
Then you've got some people just like, it's just a guy who committed suicide.
Yeah.
He had no family, so no one knows who he is. There's nothing strange about it. These things together seem strange, but in isolation, some people do cut the labels out of their clothes. Maybe his surname was Keane.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? There's some stuff that maybe we're in, when we put it all together, it feels odd. And actually, when you separate it out, it's not that odd.
Yeah,
I don't know what the fuck the book's about.
Overanalyzing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the suicide one that I read sounded really sad because someone got kind of poetic with it. They said, a man, possibly already dying of terminal illness, wishes to get dressed up one last time and look out on a fantastic Australian sunset and end his life. It's like, fuck, all right.
Yeah, it could be that. You obviously get the other shit of he's an alien.
I didn't see any of those.
Yeah, well, I just feel like you could always chuck that theory out there. There's always like, he's an alien.
Why not?
As a theory. Yeah, and there's just, I don't know if there's any others that sort of stood out to you. They're all a bit sort of clutching at straws.
There's a good one that I read that was titled Assassination by Wildlife that I really
right,
enjoyed.
I haven't got that one written down,
yeah.
So go on.
Not killed by, assassinated. All they said was, Australia has plenty of interest in wildlife, some of it very poisonous. Could the Somerton man have been bitten or stung by something deadly while he was asleep, or maybe he was drunk and fell asleep on the beach, got bitten by something?
That's it. It could just be a bloke chilling out on the beach having a cig, and he gets bitten by some mad Australian creature.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like the cigarette thing is like when he has one behind his ear and he's got one half smoking that's fallen on him, it's almost like he's passed out and it's fallen out of his mouth. Because it was like, so they said it was sort of between his, it's like almost like they said it was like on his neck or something, where he's laying down and it dropped out of his mouth and fallen on his chest or something. It's like in that chest, shoulder, neck area, half smoking cigarette. So I could buy that. Like he was sitting there having a cigarette, watching the sunrise or something, and get stung by something weird.
Oh, I've just found that picture actually. Yeah. Oh, that's kind of strange. It does look like he's just asleep. Just got his hand up on his chest. He's got one knee up still. Mm. That's really quite creepy.
So yeah, there are loads of theories, but they're all kind of a little bit wishy-washy. The one that I did find interesting, I don't know if you looked anything into a woman named Rachel Egan or Egan.
The name rings a bell. I haven't got that in my notes, though. Go on.
So, this is the theory, the ballet dancer theory.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that one.
And I read this on the Daily Mail, unfortunately. the headline, how a dead man's muscly calves and an adopted little girl who loved ballet could hold the key to solving one of Australia's most baffling mysteries.
Oh, this is going to be great.
What's interesting about this is this was an article that came out in the first half of last year. So this is only just before they actually, spoilers listeners, we know who this guy is, before they actually identified him, there's this mad theory going around. They must have felt like absolute dolts when 2 months later they were like, nah, it was this guy. Because, okay, so this gets a bit, I tried to summarize it in my notes because it's a bit convoluted. But anyway, this woman, named Rachel Egan. How would you say that?
I'd say Egan.
Egan, yeah. Rachel Egan claimed that he was her grandfather. She was married. So this Rachel Egan, she married to a guy, Derek Abbott, who coincidentally was a professor attempting to crack the case.
Uh-huh.
So already it's a little bit like, oh, that's a bit of a coincidence. A detective trying to crack a case married the woman who said and claims it's her grandfather. He'd spent over a decade trying to crack this case. Anyway, this Rachel Egan, her father, a man named Robin Thompson, was an Australian ballet dancer. And she believes, Rachel believes, that Justin, the nurse from earlier, whose real name was Joe Thompson, had a secret relationship with the Somerton man, and that this nurse, Jo Thompson, is Rachel's grandmother.
Right, okay.
So she's saying this is her granddad.
Yeah.
Because her grandma is the nurse, Justin, real name Jo Thompson.
Yep.
And she believes that she had a secret affair with this man.
Right, I'm with you.
Right, so it's a bit complicated. The giveaway were his sculpted legs, because he's a family of ballet dancers or something.
Right, okay.
You can see how my interest trailed off on this absolutely ludicrous theory.
Yeah, because he just looks like a sort of regular paunchy sort of 40, 50-something dude.
Yeah, he's kind of got slightly broad features, I would say. He's got kind of a broad-looking face.
Yeah.
Broad shoulders.
I wouldn't say it's a ballet dancer's physique.
No, but anyway, she's claiming that his son is a ballet dancer. Is it his son? Yeah. Egan's father, Robin Thompson, was a ballet dancer. I get so complicated this story. I read it so many times, and every time I read it, I was like, wait, what? Who is related to? It's just his name flying everywhere. And because I know they know who he is, I know it's not true, so I'm so not invested. Oh,
you need like a Pepe Silva chart.
Yeah, so I'm sitting there trying to work out, and I'm like, it doesn't matter because it's not even true. Anyway, so these people, this fool Derek Abbott, who chucked all his hat in the ring with this idea,
yeah,
to be proved wrong only a couple of months later. Even after all this, they're unsure of how he died. They were just like, we think it's this guy. We think it's a man who had an affair with the nurse, and the woman who claimed that is the nurse's granddaughter. So she's saying he had an affair with my grandma, and therefore he's my granddad, or something like this.
So essentially,
that's the ballet dancer,
because at the time there was no evidence as to who he was. They just made up a very convoluted story, stitched something together that put him in their family tree.
Yeah, I mean, these articles of the mystery of the Somerton man, possibly ballet dancer, blah, blah, blah. There's so many of them, and they're all so long.
Mm.
Every article about it is so long because it's so convoluted, like where her mindset is of why he's related to her, that I just, every time I read one, I was like losing my mind.
Yeah, I think I did read a little bit about this, because I think I read somewhere in their home that they had like a picture of him on the wall, and it got, yes, got me to thinking, like, what picture did they have? Was it like the corpse photo?
Yeah, it has to be.
That's fucked.
Oh no, I think they had a picture. You're ringing my bell on something else now, Rick. It there was someone who had a picture, and they said, this looks like him.
Oh.
This is him, or something like that.
Oh.
It was a painting, I think, maybe even.
Okay. So that they probably commissioned a photo of a painting of him that they put up on their wall and went, look, we're related.
Like I say, these mad theories, it's kind of hard to get invested in when you know they're not true.
Mm-hmm.
Because the case has kind of been closed.
Yeah.
So that was September 2021, when Rachel Egan, so it wasn't last year, it was the year before, I forget we're in 2023 now, so... It was September 2021 and the news came out about Rachel Egan claiming he's the ballet dancing granddad. But August 22, so it was less than a year later, the truth came out.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah. Rick, who was this mysterious man?
This man was Carl Webb.
Okay, cool. Who's Carl Webb?
Just a guy.
it's so deflating.
It's really boring. And I know that sounds so anticlimactic, but it's true. He's just some dude. There was some research that was put together by a chap called Derek Abbott from the University of Adelaide. And he wanted to analyse the Somerton man's DNA using hairs that were found in the plaster cast that was taken of his face
at the time
of his death. And they managed to find three viable hairs back in 2017. And they sent them off to be tested. And they're waiting. They got the DNA results through. And then he teamed up with a US forensic expert called Colleen Fitzpatrick, who specializes in cold cases. And they built an extended family tree using that DNA profile. And from 4,000 names that came up, they managed to narrow it down to Carl Webb, and they tracked down his living relatives and used their DNA to confirm his identity. There's a quote that I found from Professor Abbott, where he said it's a triangulation from two totally different, totally distant parts of the family tree. So it sounds like it was one hell of a forensic scramble.
Yes.
But ultimately it's led to something that's just so deflating.
It's like, after all that, it comes down to like, well, it can only really be this guy, and this guy is Carl Webb. It's just a like electrical engineer from Melbourne.
Yeah.
And there has no genetic ties to Roger Egan. I did check that.
None at all. None at all.
yeah, so this man, this Carl Webb, I've got a little bit of info. This is from the SmithsonianMag.com. I've read a few different articles on this, but this is the one I'm reading from here. So this man was born in Footscray, a suburb of Melbourne, on November 16th, 1905. Webb was the sixth child of a German-born man and an Australian woman. He married Dorothy Jean Robertson, who's listed on the couple's marriage certificate as a 21-year-old foot specialist. At the time, Webb was a 35-year-old instrument maker. The last mention of Webb in the historical record dates April 1947, as when he left his wife. In October 1951, 3 years after the Somerton man's death, Dorothy placed a notice in the Age newspaper stating that she had begun divorce proceedings against Webb on the grounds of desertion. By then, Dorothy had moved from Melbourne to Butte, a town 89 miles northeast of Adelaide. It's possible that Webb came to this state to try and find her. This is Abbott. That's what he tells CNN. And this, this is just us drawing the dots. We can't say for certain this is the reason he came, but it seems logical. They still don't know. Records show that Webb enjoyed reading and writing poetry, as well as betting on horse races. And he had a sister who lived in Melbourne and was married to a man named Thomas Keane, likely the T. Keane, whose name appears on the clothing in the Somerton man's suitcase.
Yep.
So it's like his brother-in-law's clothes that he borrowed off him, basically. It's like everything is kind of like, oh.
Yeah, it's really deflating.
Yeah, he loved reading and writing poetry. So yeah, that probably was his copy of the Ribeye Hat.
Yeah, and something else I read was that the scrap of paper that he had on him, it's theorised that it could be coded messages about horse races and tips that he had.
Oh,
that's
interesting.
Trying to disguise, but that's never actually been proven. And something else that I read was apparently he was a bit of a dick. It's kind of deflating when you read something like that, because somebody's so cloaked in mystery and almost like anonymous, even though they're a person. When the actual details of their life come out and it's filled in, it is oftentimes very deflating. But his wife said that he was a solitary man, having few friends, living a quiet life and being in bed by 7 p.m. each night, but also moody, violent and threatening, especially when facing defeat, even over relatively trivial matters. And then, yeah, it goes on to say he was fond of poetry and wrote several poems of his own, most of them on the subject of death, which he claimed to be his greatest desire. And that would be consistent with the copy of the Ribeye Hat, which also focuses on the subject of death.
But the thing is, we still don't actually know how he died.
No.
The report in The Guardian as well, that sort of closes off by saying, you know, who is the Somerton man has sort of been solved, but now it's the mysterious case of Charles Webb. Like, how did he die? It's probably one of those very mundane answers. When it comes down to, like, this guy was just sort of like, you know, separating from his wife, electrical engineer, blah, blah. He probably was either suicide or some sort of nasty poisoning from some sort of Australian creature while he was on that beach.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't anything fantastical. One of the theories earlier was like he might have asphyxiated on the beach. Might have just been a complete accident, falling asleep or whatever on the beach.
The conclusion of the two people who were doing the DNA analysis and the family tree tracing said that they believed he had serious mental health issues and spiraled down after losing four close relatives within 7 years over the period of World War II. And his history and the autopsy findings suggest that he probably committed suicide by poisoning himself.
Mm-hmm. If you're going to do it, I suppose if he's in that sort of dour situation, sitting on the beach, having a cigarette, you know, it's sad, but you know, it feels very like chosen.
Yeah, I know what you mean, like almost like a romanticized suicide.
Yeah,
like someone's into poetry and everything. You're seeing the sun go down. Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's sad, and you know, it's also quite boring. I know that sounds like a harsh thing to say about someone's someone's death, but for what was such a mystery for, you know, the best part of 80 years to be solved, and he's just a guy, just a poor,
nothing's
sad
ever
guy.
Going to live up to the mysteries, is it? It's like, you know, trouble. Jack the Ripper, and when everyone said, when the revolution came out a few years ago, where they're like, oh, we think it's this guy, it's this like Polish barber.
Mm.
People were like, no, it wasn't, because they wanted it to be more, because there was all them rumours that it was a member of the royal family and stuff with Jack the Ripper and all that stuff, and people wanted the juicier take than just, oh, he's a Polish barber, he just liked killing people.
Yeah.
And most people believe that's probably the case with Jack the Ripper, but still some people hold out that it's something a bit juicier, and it's like this, so, you know, you kind of, I think everyone wanted it to be something a bit more mysterious, but sometimes it's just a bloke.
Yeah, that's it. You know, the weirdest thing about this whole thing, do you remember when I messaged you the other day and I said, I don't know how much more there is to say about this guy? Mm. The reason I said that, I thought we had already revisited this, but I remembered, as we've been talking, exactly what happened. I went back and started listening to all the weird tales from the start. I listened to the episode about the Somerton Man, and that was probably around about March, April last year. And then I went down a bit of a YouTube rabbit hole and I watched loads of stuff about it. And for some reason, in my head, I thought we'd done a revisit. So I was like, oh, he probably just wants to do a little wrap-up on it.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
The reason I actually had a weird thing where I thought we'd already done it as well, but I was thinking of the man from Tourette.
Ah, yeah.
Because I know the reason I got confused, because they're both mysteries about a man.
Strange guys who we didn't know they were.
That I talked about both of them on Weird Tales episode 1.
Mm.
Listeners, if you haven't listened to mine and Rick's fantastic episode on the man from Tourette, that's a bonus episode which you can purchase if you go to bobshoy.bandcamp.com, bobshoy.bandcamp.com. You can buy the digital album which collects the three previously exclusive Weird Tales Revisited episodes on the man from Tourette, the Dyatlov Pass incident, and the Mandela Effect, and they're all absolute bangers.
They were actually really good fun, those ones.
They're really good ones. And they do regularly get purchased, so probably a lot of people that have wanted to listen to them already have. But in case you haven't, and you're looking for more Weird Tales, on that Bandcamp there are some little bonus extra episodes, including extra Weird News episodes as well that me, Beef and Tiss did.
It's a bit of an aside, but did you ever look at that, the one I mentioned a while ago? It was about the American equivalent of Dyatlov Pass.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, what was that called?
Yeah, I can't remember. I only ever remember it as the American Dyatlov Pass.
I remember you sending it. I remember looking into that.
Let's have a quick look.
I swear I even saw it the other day because I was clearing out some of my favourites and I'd saved the link.
The Yuba County 5.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah. Listeners, go and have a little look into that. That is fascinating. I didn't know anything about that until I'd done the Dyatlov episode.
Yeah, I remember when you sent that to me and I read up on that, I chucked it in the Weird Tales, like, possible episodes list, the never-ending Weird Tales possible episodes list.
That's got to be quite a deep bucket, that one.
Yeah, well, we just have this joint list that we share, and sometimes we just, if we're not sure what to do, all three of us, we will just jump into that and just pick something off of it.
That's quite nice.
It sounds juicy.
Hmm.
Or we try and surprise the others by not doing something from the list. So that's, I think that's us. Like the Somerton Man coming to a close. That case, this episode has come to a close because there's not much more to say about it. It's some dude. I think we thought this episode was going to be a little bit shorter than regular, and it is.
Yeah. Just some dude called Carl.
Yeah. So, case closed.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Like I said, listeners, if you want to listen to some more, you can go to that Bandcamp page. You can also go to weirdtalesandtheunexplainable.com to follow links to that Bandcamp page or to buy merchandise or links to wherever. You can find us on Facebook. Most people communicate via the Facebook page now. I'm still holding the fort over on Twitter. One of the last remaining people on Twitter, it feels like. I'm at Bob Shoy there, though. If you want to say hi, I do respond to everyone. It's at BOBSHOY. And yeah, you can go to my website if you want to listen to other podcasts I've done. It's bobshoy.com. And that feels weird because it's the first time I've done the spiel for a long time. And you know, I've forgotten the most important thing. If you want to get in contact
with
us, it's WTATU pod gmail.com. And we've had some really nice messages from everyone over Christmas. So we do read every single one. I do try and respond to every single one. So if you haven't had a response from me, I probably just haven't got around to it yet because I sort of do them in batches when I get a free afternoon. And or I might have just missed your message altogether, in which case I'm really sorry. Sometimes they get lost and I feel bad. I feel like people think I ignored them, but sometimes they just don't get through to me.
And you're a busy man. You're a human being. You're not exclusively a podcaster. And I think occasionally people need to remember that. Exactly.
Yeah, this is my third job. I'm a plasterer and a student and this.
Yes.
So, yeah. Yeah, have we got any other stuff we want to talk about, Rick?
I'm just going to plug him because I'm super into him at the moment, but go check out The Longest Johns.
Oh, we went to see him. I mentioned it on the last episode. I talked about talked to Beef and Tiz about going to a sea shanties gig.
Arr.
I went with Rick. Rick, how was that? What did we go and do?
It was amazing. It was this beautiful little place in Leeds. I drove over and went to go see Bob, and we went to go and see The Longest Johns, and they were...
Shout out to the Broodnell. So, it was the Broodnell, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was Broodnell. Yeah, we saw The Longest Johns, a sea shanty band, and they were supported by a fantastic Spanish outfit called El Pony Pizador. And
yes.
So much energy in that room. It was fantastic.
It was a great atmosphere. It really was. I feel like even if you went there having no idea what you were going for, you'd probably have a good time because the atmosphere was great.
Yeah.
It was really good fun.
And they do a lot of American songs as well, like the old railroad sort of songs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of stuff about the American shipping as well. It's worth checking out. It's fun music, and you're not going to walk away from it like without a smile on your face. That's what I'd say.
There you go. Rick's recommendation of the week.
Yeah.
I'll put some sort of link to some of their stuff on in the show notes for your
man.
Listeners.
Gotta be done.
Right, well, that's us then. Listeners, next time, me, Beef and Tiss realised the last episode we did was a real mess. So what we've got is we've got two episodes. This is how much of a mess it was, even though people have contacted us saying they really liked it for some fucking reason. We're going to take two episodes to put right what we put wrong on. So the next two episodes are, in a way, spin-offs off that.
Nice.
Revisiting two classic Weird Tales formats. And then after that, basically we planned the next six episodes in a row. After that, within the next episodes, six episodes, I'm also going to finally be revisiting the Alien Abduction series I started last year, which people keep asking me about. So you have to not ask me about it anymore. It's coming soon, probably in about three episodes time. I've already got the episode planned out. There's some really juicy abduction stories to cover still. So there is more of that coming. That is like the most requested thing we've had over the last year.
Excellent. That's why I love doing this stuff, because I feel like I get the sort of inside scoop on what's coming as a fan. I'm just like, yay.
Well, normally we're a little bit coy about what's coming up, but I feel like I've been a little bit more open. So yeah, we've got sort of six episodes lined up. Why six episodes? Two of those are Beef and Tisses, and I don't know what they are, but they assure me they've got them lined up. So
awesome.
It's we're coming out swinging in 2023.
Nice. Look forward to it.
So until then, everyone, thanks for listening. Rick, thanks for joining me on
thank
this
you.
Weird Tales Revisited.
Love to the listeners, and thank you.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. Love you lots. Bye-bye.
Bye.
To this day, the case is still unsolved, and the man has never been identified.
What? So we don't know what language that was translated from?
Yeah, we do. I don't know, actually. Sorry, it's from the Rubaiyat.
All right.
Do you want me to have a look?
I think I've heard that story before.
Have you? It's quite famous.
That scrap of paper, I don't know if that's true or whether I just remembered it wrong, but I'm pretty sure that scrap of paper was ripped from that book they found.
Oh, really?
And written on that paper from the book, then torn.
Well, torn from that back page. I haven't, and that was one of the stories. Yeah, that might be the case. Oh, I'm glad I've said one that you've heard of before.
Yeah,
I thought you'd have like known a few of these. Because these are very famous ones I'm bringing up now.
Was there anything
it's
unusual?
Persian.
Mm. Is there anything unusual about his death? Like any... He was just dead. There was nothing on his body or...
I can't find anything here that actually suggests what was the cause of his death.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That makes it weirder, I think.
Mm. The fact that no one knows who he is, well, like, he's never been identified. It's such a weird thing to find on a dead body. But then to be like, no one knows who he is. It's kind of weird, because for such a famous case, because you think by now someone would have been like, oh yeah, it's my granddad.
Yeah.
Like, someone recognise him. Like, there's pictures of him all over the internet. You type it in, there's a picture of that guy's face.
No one knows who he is.
No one knows who he is. Unidentified guy.
Is it a young guy or an old guy?
Do you want me to show you a picture of Tamam? I refer to him as Tamam Shad. Here, type it in, you'll see him.
I'll Google it. So it's
Tamam Shud.
Oh, it's come up immediately.
Hmm.
Okay. Yeah, he's just dead. He's just, yeah, there's no, that's really, really strange. And the writing's weird as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a really strange font.
Yeah.
We're looking at the Tamam Shud guy. This is him.
Wow.
He's a weird looking guy as well.
Very weird.
He looks like he looks like his face is going to open. There's a little alien controlling him inside, in black.
Yeah.
No disrespect.
But then you do get that, I suppose. Every now and then you do get, like, people in, and you know, he may have just had a really unfortunate life. Maybe his parents died when he was young. Maybe he never got married, never had kids.
Mm.
And in Australia, like, it is, people are very sporadically, like, it's not close-knit communities. Like, maybe he, but then if it went on to, like, became national, I don't know, maybe you'd have thought people would have seen his picture and gone, oh, that's Fred.
There's quite a few strange stories from Australia.
Well, I bet.
Yeah?
Mm.
Got some are you leading into something?
No. I did see, there is, I saw a few stories on the web, but I haven't seen anyone I've written down, because that's probably the most famous.